time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. This is our show for November 2nd, 2019. If you're hearing this today, Saturday, November 2nd, or Sunday, November 3rd, and you're in the Philadelphia area, you might want to mosey on down to the Pennsylvania Convention Center for the 10th Annual Philly Bike Expo. This year sounds like such an amazing event, and unfortunately, I can't be there. However, I do have a great show for you today. It's a threefer. It includes a chat with Bicycling Magazine's Fit Chick, Celine Yeager, about her new book, Gravel, a quick trip down under to speak with Sam Wood from Bike Odyssey Cycling Tours about his upcoming Allies Normandy to the Rhine tour to celebrate and commemorate the 75th anniversary of the end of World War II. And finally, a conversation with the Secretary of Transportation for the state of Pennsylvania, Leslie Richards. A quick note before we begin about next week's show. I'll be out of the country beginning, well, today actually, and I'll be back next Friday. I have a lengthy and fun chat with travel writer, author, and reluctant triathlete Will McGough about his newly published book, and I mean newly published, like this week. It's titled Swim, Bike, Bonk, and it is excellent, very funny, very real. You'll learn everything you want to know about whether you want to do an Ironman or not. And then I'll be talking with Eben Weiss, a.k.a. Bike Snob NYC, for what I think will be a laugh-out-loud conversation. That will be aired on November 16th. Next week, our show is dark, meaning we're not having one. So let's head on over to PA to talk with Bicycling Magazine's Fit Chick, Celine Yeager, about her new book, Gravel, The Ultimate Guide to the Gear, Training, and Grit You Need to Crush It. Hey, Celine, welcome back to The Outspoken Cyclist. Congratulations on the publication of your new book, Gravel.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Yeah, this is so cool. The Ultimate Guide to the Gear, Training, and Grit. You Need to Crush It. Well, we'll get to the crush it part later. So
it's all relative.
That is so true. That's so true. So everybody's talking gravel, and Yes. And you really do cover the gamut, you know, from, I mean, we could go through the chapter by chapter, but I think what we'll do is just pick up a few really important things. Start for me by defining gravel from your perspective. What does it really mean? Is it really old, you know, old clothes in a new, or an old thing in a new clothes?
You know, yes and no, quite honestly. As I talk about in the book, and that's honestly a big part of the reason that I was inspired to write the book, is that gravel is so many different things. Like, I was literally at a quote unquote gravel race where I got to the bottom of a piece of single track that you would be better suited on to ride on a mountain bike. And a gentleman came up to me, he recognized me, and he said, "Celine, is this gravel?" And I was just like, well, that's a great question, because it's a very, very big umbrella. And honestly, to answer your question about, you know, whether this is, you know, something old in a new suit, many of us have been riding quote unquote gravel for a long time. I mean, gravel is essentially just an unpaved surface. Like, in general, we're talking unpaved roads, whether they're dirt roads, gravel roads. Some people extend that to double track, which might be, you know, something that service vehicles travel on in the forest, right? And then some people take that a little further and they go to single track, which is what we tend to think of as mountain bike trail. You can usually tell by the description if you're going to an event, like what you're in for. But it's good to know what you might be in for, and know that there are other things besides a big open road that you could be in for. This is one of the cases where, honestly, Diane, the technology opened the door, kicked down the door, I would say, for people who enjoyed exploring these unpaved surfaces to go further, and for people who were curious about them but thought it was just kind of a giant pain in the neck to take your road bike on gravel because you got flat tires and the brakes didn't work super well, and if you got into mud, the whole bike packed up. Like, once they put disc brakes on road bikes, everything changed. And that's, in my mind, that is really what has ignited a lot of this revolution.
Interesting, because I railed against the idea of disc brakes on road bikes for a while, thinking about the whole process of, well, what do we need that for? Because you have to reinforce forks. You have to do some things differently. But I guess the truth is that now that they've figured out all the technology and have the reinforced forks, and there is some suspension and whatever else, comfort, wider tires, you have to have different brakes for wider tires. I guess it makes sense. Plus, roads are, you know, we're back to that. Roads are scary to a lot of people right now. So, yeah, I think
you're
right.
Honestly, I ride my quote-unquote gravel bike as my road bike now. I mean, it has very close to road bike geometry. I will tell you, I took my road bike out on a ride this summer for the first time in a long time, and it rained. And I was reminded at how not well rim brakes stop on steep roads.
That's true.
You know, I come from, I mountain bike a lot, and I've always appreciated how well disc brakes help you modulate speed and stop. They work so much better. And yes, there had to be some adjustments made to road bikes, but again, in my opinion, it's only made them better. It's made them sturdier. It's opened the avenue to the wider tires that, even if you're, you know, I still ride on the roads here. I still love riding on the roads, but in Pennsylvania, our roads are often potholed. They've got gravel on them. They've got, you know, any assortment of obstacles at any day. And instead of being on a sketchy race road bike, I'm just on my gravel bike, and it's a much more relaxing ride.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Celine Yeager. She is the fit chick. If you read her column, I assume you're still writing your column. I don't read Bicycling Every Day.
I still have the column in Bicycling, and I'm all over the website. Yeah.
Right. And her new book is Gravel! Exclamation point. The ultimate guide to the gear training and grit you need to crush it. So I want to talk a little bit. I know not everybody wants to race on gravel.
Right.
But there are some amazing races. In fact, the people who are doing Dirty Kanza, which is, I think, Lifetime, just announced a new one in Arkansas, Bentonville, Arkansas, coming up. So there are some amazing races. And we've talked to the people from Dirty Kanza. It's one hell of an event. But what if you don't want to race?
You don't have to race. Most of the people aren't racing. Though I've done all these events, and some of them I've raced, and some of them I have chosen not to race, but I've still participated. And I'm being very sincere. Most people who line up to these events are not necessarily racing them. They're not there to try to beat the person next to them. They're not necessarily even there to try to beat any specific time, though that often comes into play. Many times it's just like running a marathon. People don't really compete marathons, most people that do them. They're just there for the experience, right? They're there to challenge themselves and the experience. And that's the same could be said for all these gravel events. And I think that's why they're so popular. You know, mountain bike races, you could say the same thing, but it's a very specific skill set, right? And you have to be willing to take, you know, go on more technical terrain. Not everyone's comfortable with that. And that's 100% understandable. Road races are races, you know, cyclocross races are races. Gravel events are events. You can get up in front and choose to, you know, go for it at the pointy end, or just like have your day. And, you know, we do unpaved here in Pennsylvania, and, you know, our rest stops had pierogies and bacon, like in fire pits. So it wasn't like if you weren't racing, you put down your bike when you got to 50 miles and you had a meal. And then you got back on your bike and rode around and took pictures and had a wonderful day on the bike on a course that somebody has presented to you for maximum enjoyment. I mean, that's really what it's about.
For sure. It is about enjoyment. Bicycling is about enjoyment. Well, it's also about health and recreation. I mean, there are a whole bunch of things.
And
transportation.
Things, but it's going to be fun. You better be having some sort of fun. Either type 1 or type 2.
Well, let's talk a little more about the book itself, because it has a whole lot of information, starting with a chapter, it really is about the bike. And so we did define the fact that there is a difference between gravel bikes, but you actually go into things like frame material. You talk about snap versus stability, which is kind of an interesting topic. It gets a little more technical. You talk about drivetrain configuration, 2 versus 1. Now that's kind of a new thing, this one by. And I think that you are talking pros and cons in that. And I mean, you just go into such really interesting stuff. If you were to pick one thing from that, it's really about the bike chapter that people may or may not know, what might it be?
I think what would serve people well to think about specifically in that chapter is what I tried to do. Because I have these discussions with people quite a bit when they're looking for quote unquote a gravel bike and actually what is a gravel bike, is that there is a spectrum even within this little niche category now. So it really is important. What do you want to do with it? You know, bike packing is sort of taking off where you put all this stuff on your bike and you go off into the wilderness. Some people even race that, like the Continental Divide. And those bikes, like the Salsa Cutthroat that I just reviewed at Keystone Gravel, which was a sort of a grind duro event where you race your gravel bike on stuff that is a little mountain bikey. It requires a different geometry than a Dirty Kanza or another more road race, road dirt road event. So it's just like, okay, are you going to be on mostly open dirt roads, road surfaces, that kind of thing? Or are you really looking at this as more of a drop bar mountain bike? Or do you want to pack it up with stuff? And if you want to pack it up with stuff, you need to be able to do that. That means there needs to be more mounts and, you know, frame clearance. So I think that's a really good place to start, you know, just to get your head around, like, okay, because that also helps you understand, like, what does gravel mean to me and what do I want to do? And then what bike is best for that? I mean, you can do a gravel event on anything, really. But if you're on a road bike with rim brakes and all you can fit on is 28 tires, you won't get very far at a lot of pretty rugged events, you know? So that's where, you know, a cyclocross bike, if it has disc brakes, will get you a little further. Gravel bike gets even further. If all you have is a mountain bike and you've never tried it, go out on your mountain bike and try it.
Perfect. I love it. So do you use fenders on your bikes?
I tend not to. I have and it is technically called an Ass Saver. That is the brand.
That's fine. You can say that on this show.
Okay. Thank you. I know that we're, you know, I'm very careful about that, but that is the brand, which is just like a little extension behind your saddle. Because the problem with fenders, the kind that you'd use in the Pacific Northwest all winter long, is that if you do hit mud, they pack up.
That's
true. You're not going anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah. So it's better to use that kind of a elevated system that just, it doesn't do anything for the people behind you, but it keeps your back dry.
So I want to get back to the book for a second, but then I want to ask you a question that you probably didn't know I was going to ask you. You talk about what to eat. You talk about something called turn the cave into a tunnel, which is, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but we'll talk about it.
I can explain it to you.
Yeah, I know you can. You wrote it. And you also have some really interesting training stuff in here. So you are, and I'm not sure you have to do this training to race, but you could just do this training anyway. I mean, there's some really cool things. 3 key gravel crushers. And I think those are, there's a squat, there's a plank row, some of this looks a little bit like my yoga, but just a little more heavy duty. But for sure, there's so much stuff. There's food. I mean, this is like a complete guide to everything.
That was the idea. Yeah. It was just an idea to take me through.
It came off that way. So what was it I wanted to ask you? You could explain to me. I already lost it because I'm playing with your book.
Was it the tunnel in the cave?
Yeah, the tunnel in the cave.
So I don't know how familiar you are with the term pain cave or going into the cave.
Yes.
It's a very popular term when, especially if you're looking at something as seemingly interminably long as a Dirty Kanza, you are inevitably going to go into a dark place where everything hurts. You don't know why you're there. You don't want to continue. You don't want to eat. You don't want to drink. You just really would like to stop. And it feels like a cave. And what is a cave? A cave goes to a dead end, right? A dark, dark dead end. And I contend that those caves are not caves, but they're tunnels. They're long and they can be dark in the middle, But if you keep taking care of yourself and making forward progress, you'll eventually find the light on the other side. And that's what makes you strong for not just the bike, but for life in general. I mean, I hate to go like into a sudden deep dive there, but getting through those dark times absolutely transcends the bicycle.
That is such a cool explanation. I really like it a lot.
Thank you.
So one thing we didn't define, there's gravel and then there's grinder. What is gravel grinding? What's the difference?
It's a dumb term is what it is. Yeah, I mean, it just is. It's the original term for a gravel event. And I think it's really just onomatopoeia. I think it's meant to, because your tires are literally, you can hear them grinding over the road.
That's true.
And I think that that's really all that is. But a lot of people don't like the term. And I've come to not quite like it either, because it's not meaningful to people, I don't think. And it connotes something that's very, it sounds almost inaccessible to me. I don't know. They're just gravel events.
I like your original, it's just a dumb term. That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. All right. Before we get to the last part, which is going to be about finding good places to gravel and not grind necessarily, let me remind our listeners once again, we're speaking with Celine Yeager. She is the Fit Chick, if you read bicycling read her column. And it's both online and I think in print. And the name of the book, it's brand new. It's called Gravel! Exclamation point. So, and everything's in here that you might need to know to learn about gravel, which is what's interesting is that we actually have to define it. It's kind of interesting because, you know, we ride all over the place. But anyway, where do you find these? And you have a wonderful chapter about finding gravel and must-do, quote-unquote, grinders. Where did you find all of these events? Are they listed anywhere beside in your book?
Yeah, there's no like magic or master list of gravel events. You know, a lot of that is just a lot of what's in the book are marquee events, if you will. It's very well known events across the country. Many of which I've done. I won't say most because I can't remember exactly everything I was on that list. But if I haven't done it, I know someone very close to me who has. And they're super well known. But if you go on bikereg.com, there's actually a gravel tab now. And you would be shocked at how many gravel events are probably within 50 miles of yourself. You know, there's a lot more than people know that are out there. And, you know, there's also some tricky ways to find it. You can go to, you know, often state parks, national parks, like anything that has park in it often has unpaved surfaces in it. And there is also a website that I don't have the book in front of me, but you probably do, where it actually has gravel roads on it.
Huh. Okay.
I sold my last book over the weekend, so I need to refresh my copies.
I think that would be a good idea. Maybe you should talk with that publisher of yours, right?
I should. I should know somebody there that can help me out.
You should.
You'd be surprised.
Well, that brings me to something that you bring up in the book, which I find to be so true. And I do the same thing in yoga, that you can laugh. There is no reason to take it so damn seriously that you can't laugh. Talk to me about laughing and where you just laughed right out loud. Give me an incident.
Yeah, I mean, there have been many. I mean, there's just sometimes it's just ludicrous. Like they'll send you into, you know, a stream crossing that is, you know, maybe more of a swim crossing, you know, and you're just like, okay, I guess that's what we're doing right now. And you just have to keep your sense of humor about you. Cause a lot of times the event promoters are trying to, show you a little something special, trying to have a little fun. And it's just good to embrace that, you know, to go into it with that state of mind, because it's, again, back to, it should be fun. It's also like, it's okay to laugh at yourself. It's okay to laugh at like the situations. In fact, I highly encourage it.
Yeah, no kidding. So the last thing is, since I can't just call you up and say, hey, Celine, send me a copy of your book because you're out, where can people get a copy? Where can people find a copy of the book? It'd be a great gift. This is a great gift.
Thank you. The easiest place is Amazon, quite frankly. Amazon.com has a steady supply, and you can buy them from Hearst too, but you know, Hearst just gives them to Amazon. So just, you know, that's the best place to go for them.
My press copy came from Amazon. I was really surprised. I'm like, I'm not expecting anything from Amazon today. And then I'm like,
that's
oh,
because
wait.
I went to Amazon and I just ordered it for you and sent it to you.
Well, I appreciate
it. They were out at the warehouse. Have I mentioned that problem? But they're all back in stock and I should maybe order one for myself.
Maybe.
And there you have it. These are good problems to have.
They are good problems to have. And I really appreciate you taking time to sit, talk, and laugh with me today. Once again, we've been speaking with Celine Yeager. She is the author of Gravel, The Ultimate Guide to the Gear, Training, and Grit You Need to Crush It. And read her column in Bicycling. She's the fit chick. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me back.
Okay. You take care. Celine Yeager joined me from her home in Pennsylvania. She's so interesting to talk to because she walks the walk and talks the talk and has a really good way of conveying all that she learns and all that she does. The book is Gravel, The Ultimate Guide to the Gear, Training, and Grit You Need to Crush It. Might make a really good holiday gift this year. You can find it at all the usual places. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to head down under to talk about Bike Odyssey Tours with its owner and founder, Sam Wood. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We are back. I'm Diane Jenks, and you are listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. A couple of weeks ago, I had the chance to talk with Sam Wood. He's the founder and owner of Bike Odyssey Cycle Tours out of Australia. Sam is a really interesting guy. He's an archaeologist by training, absolutely loves history, and also loves cycling. Put that all together and you get Bike Odyssey Tours. In 2020, he's got two new tours. One that I think might be very interesting to many of our listeners, the Allies Tour. It's from Normandy to Rhine to commemorate and celebrate the ending of World War II. Here's my conversation with Sam. Hi, Sam. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thanks, Diane. Very nice to be here.
Well, I was going to start our chat with a conversation about your company, Bike Odyssey Cycle Tours, but then I did some research and you happen to be an interesting guy. Like you like to swim in really, really cold places. That's strange, but interesting. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, what you studied, and how you decided that you wanted to get into bicycle touring.
Oh, thanks, Diane. That's very, very kind of you. I guess I did have quite an unusual path to get to being a bike touring operator. Like, I grew up in Australia. I spent most of my formative years in a little town called Newcastle, north of Sydney, and I ended up loving ancient history and studying archaeology, and I spent my time at Sydney University doing that and then ended up working in that field for, about a dozen years. And at the end of that, I ended up at the British Museum, and the British Museum in London is a fantastic place to work. And I used to spend all my spare time, as I did probably since I was 20 at that stage, cycling historical trails. And so from there, I thought, well, someone else might like the sound of this, writing and talking about history. So I proposed with my brother, who happened to be a BBC correspondent, to ride Hannibal's Trail, who was an ancient Carthaginian from North Africa who invaded Rome about 2,000 years ago, to follow his trail from Spain to France to Italy for the BBC. And we ended up riding for about 10 weeks and chatting about history for the BBC about 10 years ago now. And from there, I thought, well, this is such good fun. Maybe I should do this as work. And so I started a bike touring company. And ever since then, which was back in 2009, I've been running tours and they've all been historically themed. And we chat about the history and ride the great parts of the world.
Yes, you do. You've got some really interesting tours, very different from some of the companies people might think of right off the top of their heads about bicycle touring. And there are some really interesting companies out there, but I like the historical nature and the way you're doing some things. You use the word exceptional a lot. And from what I can see, your tours are fairly exceptional. So can you just give us a brief sort of background on the logo? Because it's an important part of sort of the face of your website.
It is an unusual one. That's true. I mean, I really wanted to have a symbol which, I guess, symbolized what we do. And no touring company seemed to have that sort of thing. And so with the historical theme, it made sense to have something historical, obviously. And it's a dog's face, essentially. It's actually a wolfhound. And the link comes, well, also because I have a couple of dogs who I love, but the real link comes because our company is called Bike Odyssey. And the Odyssey is based on Odysseus, who was the ancient Greek who was part of the original Iliad, who went off and invaded Troy, chasing Helen of Troy. But his journey back was called the Odyssey. And on that Odyssey, the one person who remembered him and the one person who was loyal to him was his dog. He actually turned up back in his house, and his house had been taken over by all sorts of people trying to court his wife. And his poor old dog was lying on the ground waiting there for him. And it put its head up, recognized him, wagged its tail, and then died. And that's a bit of an odd symbol, but that symbol is that kind of loyalty and that, I guess, that love and that relationship which that dog had is what we feel we have with our guests, which sounds a bit odd, but it's what we feel we have with our guests. We have a lot of returning riders, and we like to feel we have that historical theme and these odd stories which come out often, which are often the fun of having an atmosphere of history as you travel through Europe or South America or Australia. But it gives it that extra element, and I guess it's that odd link which we like to maintain.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Sam Wood. He is the founder and owner of, I got to get that right.
Yes. Yeah, Bike Odyssey.
It's really an interesting one. And the reason I found you was a press release about a tour you are doing brand new for 2020 called the Allies Tour. And I think a lot of my listeners in particular probably can relate to what this tour is about. So tell us about the Allies Tour. I know it's next June.
Yes, it is, exactly. Yeah, it's a big trip for us, and we're super excited about it. It's a trip from Normandy to the Rhine, which essentially follows the path of, well, the World War II invasion at D-Day. D-Day's anniversary is this year, and next year is the anniversary of the end of World War II. And what we do is we'll travel that path, and we'll talk about the history on the way. So we'll be talking about the D-Day invasions in Normandy. We'll be then traveling through a lot of the big battlefields of World War I, and we'll talk about those as well. And then we go across towards Bastogne and where the Battle of Bulge was, where Patton marched on into Germany. And we finished in a little place called Remagen. And Remagen's where the Americans first crossed the Rhine and essentially started to end World War II. So with our trips all being about history, this is just an amazing trip to do with such a big anniversary. And we'll travel with the historian, and we'll visit all the historical sites and chat about them on the way.
So I have a question about your tour guides, because you have some really interesting guides. When you take a tour that goes through a country that is perhaps not English speaking, do your guides speak the language of that country usually?
Yes, always. Yeah. So we always have local guides. We have local guides combined with people like myself who run a lot of the trips. So we try and cover all the skills, including things like sommeliers. So we have people who are experts on wines. We have people who are experts on the areas. We always have people who speak the languages. And then, very importantly for us, we always have people who understand and can talk well about the history.
That's really, really cool. Really cool. You have a different way of doing bikes, too. So you don't necessarily need people to fly their bikes over, like from the States.
No, we don't. I mean, we do find some people, and quite a few people, because our trips are a bit longer than most. I mean, our trips range from anything from 10 days to a month. We do find that some people like to bring their own bikes because they enjoy the comfort of their own steed. But we also source bikes. So we have relationships with a lot of good companies, from Pinarello to Trek to Specialized to Orbea, and we'll source those bikes depending on what people want. So we like to feel that if you're doing a trip of what we feel is this quality, we like to feel that you'd ride on the best bike and really enjoy the trip as much as possible.
That's pretty cool. Most people just have a fleet of bikes and you just choose from one of those or are assigned one of those. And here somebody can choose ahead of time to get the bike he or she wants. What is the ratio between men and women who usually take your tours, since they are a bit longer?
Well, we first thought that the ratio between men and women would be much higher men, but we've actually found that it's very close to 50% of each, which has been excellent. And I mean, part of that, it works both ways, this. I mean, but we also offer a non-rider's itinerary. And so on some of our trips, we'll have an itinerary for people who don't want to ride, and that works for males and females, obviously. But that helps more people come on our trips, and couples come on our trips, which balances it up. But we generally find anyway, even without those itineraries, that our ratio is very, very even, which is great.
That is great. How about age range?
We're a slightly older demographic. We range probably from 50 to 80. We actually had a lovely 80-year-old lady ride an Olbea electric bike from Barcelona to Rome just a few months ago on our Hannibal trip, which was excellent.
That's exactly the age range of my yoga students. Exactly. That is exactly it. So I have the list of rides that you do. And is there one that is more popular than the rest? I don't want to rattle them all off. I want people to go out and take a look because there's some interesting ones. And the last trip we're going to talk about is your new South America trip too. But what is your favorite? Forgetting for a moment the Allies, which is brand new, and the other one we'll talk about. Of the other ones that you've offered in the past, what has been the most popular, do you think?
I think our most popular trip is always Hannibal, Barcelona to Rome. And, I mean, the history is probably slightly more obscure to most people, but it's my background and my passion. I'm a Roman archaeologist originally. I worked in Pompeii for many years, and I worked all over the Mediterranean excavating Roman sites. And so that period of history, the kind of Roman Republic, is really my passion. It's something which I love and love talking about. And so Hannibal, who invaded in 219 BC, is right in the middle of that period. So I love talking about it, and I love whenever I'm at any event, cycling event or otherwise, it will come up. So it's always been our most popular, I think, because I'm always, unfortunately, talking about it. So it's also a fantastic trip. I mean, you've got the Pyrenees, the Alps, you've got Catalonia in Spain, you've got Languedoc and Provence in France, you have Tuscany, Umbria, Piedmont and Lazio in Italy. You've got all the great regions and amazing cycling throughout, as well as food and wine and everything as well.
Yeah, food and wine. We're not even going to go into that because every place you go is going to have unique and interesting food. How about accommodations? What kind of accommodations do you normally ask or use?
Well, we go for unique. And in unique, it's always high-end too. So we're looking at things like castles, monasteries, that sort of stuff. So we don't go for chain hotels just because we find that staying in unique and interesting accommodation is a really big part of the trip. But we're always looking for things like castles or monasteries, that sort of style accommodation. So there's another trip called Lionheart, which is much more kind of, I guess, medieval themed. But and we talk about Richard the Lionheart on the way from Venice to Paris. On that trip, we stay in 11 castles, I believe, on that trip. So it's a lot of history in there in where you stay as well.
That sounds like fun. Before we wrap up, let's talk about the other new trip you have for 2020. It's called Che, the South America trip. When will that happen and what's that going to be like?
That's next November, December, and that runs from Bariloche in Argentina up to Santiago in Chile. And it's a really interesting trip because it's based on a journey which Che Guevara did, which a lot of people have heard of, called the Motorcycle Diaries, when it was kind of his formative trip, when he formed all these revolutionary ideas. And it's an interesting one because Che Guevara is a really divisive character. So he's an interesting guy to talk about because a lot of people hate him and a lot of people love him too. So he's a person we can discuss and talk about in a very different way to the ancient historians like Hannibal or Lionheart and those sort of people. But the journey itself is amazing. I mean, you have volcanoes, you have lakes, you cross the Andes three times. You come up through the wine regions of Chile, and the Pacific coast there is stunning too. So it's a really, really great cycling trip. And the accommodation there is actually absolutely outstanding. So it's great fun.
Well, it just, your trip sounds so interesting. They are a bit longer, but I think we have listeners who can take that kind of time and enjoy that kind of immersion in the history of each of your trips. So we've been talking with Sam Wood. He is the owner and founder of Bike Odyssey. It's bikeodyssey.cc. And if you're interested, you can find out all about all of his tours on that website. Sam, I wish you a lot of luck with the new tours, the Allies Tour and the Che Tour. And thank you so much for talking with me today.
No, thanks for having me, Don. It's been very nice to talk to you.
All righty. You take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Sam Wood joined me from his home in Australia. If you are interested in any of the tours we spoke about in our conversation, you can log on to bikeodysseytours.cc and check them out. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to turn right back around and go to Pennsylvania to speak with the Secretary of Transportation for PennDOT, Leslie Richards. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU University Heights.
Ago, I saw a posting about a new master plan for pedestrians and cyclists for the state of Pennsylvania. So I tracked down the Secretary of Transportation, Leslie Richards, and here's what she has to say. Hello, Secretary Richards. Thanks for being on the Outspoken Cyclist Show this week. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I am great. It's a little gray here in Cleveland, but then, you know, that's our weather here. So you're in Allentown, is that right?
We're recording today from our offices in Harrisburg. That's where our main office is, the capital.
That's true. I get that confused, even though I was born in Pennsylvania. I was born in Philly. I've been reading a lot about you, and I found out about you from something you published, and you are an advocate of cycling and of pedestrian safety, and those two things really are important to me and to the listeners of our show. So you said transportation is really tied to the quality of life, communities, where people live and how they get to work, how they go about their daily life. And that was from an article in the Jewish Exponent from January of 2019. Can you expand on that a little bit, how you see cycling and pedestrians as they sort of integrate into the larger cities in your state?
Absolutely. So I have the honor of being the first in several ways in my position. I'm the first female in this position. I'm also the first planner in this position. And I have taken the opportunity to take a look at how people get around and how we can give mobility options to people who work here in the Commonwealth as well as who live here. And obviously, bicyclists and pedestrians and how they move about are very important. And we want to make sure that everybody can move about in the way that they choose in the safest way possible. In my past, the jobs that I've held, I've been involved in writing comprehensive plans for townships, for counties, for states. And I've always been interested in how quality of life issues are tied to how people get around their own neighborhoods. And walkability has always scored either in the number one position as far as a direct link to how people perceive their quality of life in the areas where they live, or it's definitely in the top three. And so that has also always been of interest to me. And more people want to get to where they need to be when they can, and they feel there's a safe way to do it in an active way, right? They can get exercise and they can get to where they're going. At the same time, sometimes it's because it's faster, depending on where they live. Sometimes because it's more enjoyable where they live. And sometimes because it's the only option they have from where they start and where they need to get to. And so we have made sure that we look at that here at PennDOT. And it's not just about getting in your car and driving on our more than 44,000 miles of state-owned and operated roadways here, but that you can also hop on a bike or use your feet and get around. We also have state-maintained trails, which are over 2,400 miles of state-maintained and operated trails that people can bike and in most cases can walk on as well. So that is also a vital part of our transportation network here.
Nice. Very nice. So are you seeing people moving back into cities like Pittsburgh, Philly, Scranton, Erie, even Harrisburg and Allentown, and looking for more public transit and more bikeable streets?
We are. In fact, I had the opportunity to participate in two different Amazon bids recently when they were looking for their second headquarters. Pittsburgh and Philadelphia were chosen as potential sites when they limited that down to 20 cities. And, you know, our department was part of a, you know, a big section of that interview process. We saw that a major employer like Amazon was extremely curious as well as concerned and needed information on how their employees, should they choose to locate in either of those cities, not only of how they would get to work, but what their access was before and after work to get to a trail to exercise or to enjoy themselves, like how they wanted to spend their free time, how they would move around the area without a car. And so obviously that highlights the need not only to get to transit, the accessibility, but also what are the other modes that are available and how easy are they to use, obviously how safe they are to use. We went over lighting, we went over timing, we went over reliability for all of those amenities that we could provide, where they are now and what our future investments would be. So we're seeing, you know, I use that as just one example, but we're seeing that employers who attract young employees, particularly ones that are just getting out of college or just getting out of high school, this is very important to them. And quality of life issues are very important to them. So we are definitely seeing an interest of people living closer to where they work, and as well as how they move about where they work. So we are definitely seeing an interest in people moving closer to cities and sometimes in the cities and taking a look when they make those choices of how they can access those trails and, you know, get out and see greenery as well. And so all of that is obviously very important with active transportation.
Let me take a moment to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Leslie Richards. She is the secretary of PennDOT, Pennsylvania Department of Transportation. And we often talk about New York as being sort of a leader in this, but you've just released, I think the study is over now, of your master plan for bicycles and pedestrians. What came out of the study and what are you going to be doing to implement some of those things? And then I have two other really important issues I want to talk to you about today.
Sure. So we're still in the process. Yes, we do have a statewide, we're calling it Active Transportation Plan. You know, we deliberately changed the name from Bicycle Pedestrian Plan to Active Transportation Plan because it includes so much more, including equity issues, access to transit, you know, and where we are going. Right now, the plan is in draft form, and we are going out to the public to get their input. And once that input gets to, you know, we're able to collect all of that, we will finalize the plan. So again, the draft Active Transportation Plan is available for public comment by the middle of November. So we're just finishing that up. So that will be available shortly in just a couple of weeks. And we hope to finalize it in early January.
So do you think you're already getting any pushback from people who are saying, I don't want more bicycle infrastructure, or I don't want more crosswalks, or I don't want, you know, whatever, that roads were made for cars, which, of course, we know going back in history, that's not so. But are you planning to do traffic calming things, narrowing car lanes and that kind of thing? Are those things included in the plan?
Options are included in the plan. We've also made changes to design manuals that also take into those considerations. But we know the future of transportation is moving as many people as safely and efficiently as possible. It is not as it used to be, which was moving as many vehicles as efficiently and safely as possible. And so we know we have to take a look at many of our urban areas in particular, but our rural areas as well, that have been designed around cars. And we have to modernize and we have to see how we safely move people in and out, obviously in an equitable way. And so we know we need to make some of those changes. Of course, we have people who are, you know, not receiving that information positively, and they like things the way they are. They can't imagine what the change is. You know, I always think, and I don't want to mess it up, but the, you know, the Henry Ford quote, you know, if we did what people asked us to do, they would have created faster horses, right? They would not have gone ahead and created a car. It's one of my favorite quotes because it just reminds me some people can only see, you know, what's, you know, straight ahead. They don't have the ability to think beyond what they already know or what they already see or what they already perceive as being the correct answer. And so we have to show them. And whether we do that in pilot programs or we see what's going on in other cities, sometimes, you know, it's a New York City, it can be a London, it can be a Copenhagen. It could be another, you know, a Pittsburgh and showing what Philly's doing, vice versa. We have to share that information and share lessons learned as we look at these things. We know that bicycling is a very attractive and sometimes necessary way for people to get around. And we need to see what we can do to make that a very safe option for people. And share the information. There are definitely areas where it's not appropriate and that we cannot provide those options safely. We know that when we have protected right-of-way, whether it's for walking, whether it's for bicycling, whether it's for scooters, that are not allowed, by the way, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania at this time, but we're looking at other cities where they are. But we know when we have those protected right-of-way, the safety and the perception of safety by those who are using it is increased, and the safety in general is increased. And so we want to look and see where we can provide that type of access, but we know we can't provide it everywhere. And so we have to look at the, you know, the specifics of the area and see what is best for that particular place.
It's interesting you bring up scooters. It was going to be a question, but you answered it. So we'll just pass on that one. I was wondering that. Well, because, you know, there's this big controversy. Now, we just drove through your state on our way to Connecticut. We took 80 straight across, and it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful state. And, you know, I often wonder what the trails are like there. And then it took me to the national park situation where they're saying, okay, you can have e-bikes everywhere. But that's now they're backing off from that a little bit. So e-bikes, scooters, you know, those things sometimes don't work well in the city. And so you answered my question that scooters are not allowed. I already heard that.
At this time, they are not, but we are discussing ways that they might, you know, be allowed in the future. Yeah. We do need state enabling legislation to be passed. We need changes to our vehicle code. So we do have time to be thoughtful about it, which is good. And we realize that they may have, you know, good outcomes in certain areas, but maybe not statewide. So we're taking a look at it. So yeah, they're not allowed yet. They may be allowed in certain places at some time in the future, but the discussion is ongoing. I just don't want to give the impression that we're not talking about it.
Okay. And I can absolutely appreciate that. Once again, we're speaking with Leslie Richards. She is the Secretary of Transportation for the state of Pennsylvania, not a city, the entire state, which is really kind of cool. A, you're a woman, which is really important to me, being in my position. So I want to talk about two other things of concern when people are either riding or walking. And that is the increase in cycling and pedestrian deaths due to things like distracted driving, DUIs, and perhaps maybe just a cavalier attitude that drivers seem to have, like, I don't care, this road belongs to me. What's going on in PA in those regards? I know you're not one of the prosecutors or judges, but as a transportation director, you may see things a little bit differently.
Sure. Well, first of all, we are concerned, you know, when we have fatality numbers, especially when they're going up. Look, we're concerned with any death over, you know, the number zero. We know we have a lot of work to do. Every day we come into work and we, you know, work on ways that we can reduce fatalities and serious injuries on our transportation network, which includes, you know, those traveling by vehicle, but also those by bicycle and walking as well. We don't want to see anything trending up. And we want to work particularly in urban areas where many of our cities here, including Philadelphia, Harrisburg, and Pittsburgh, have signed on to Vision Zero initiatives, which we fully support here at PennDOT. Again, all of the solutions are not the same, and each city has different needs, but we are very interested in working with the cities. Of course, sometimes our state laws and what the cities want to do are in conflict with each other, but we are happy, you know, to sit around a table and troubleshoot and try to figure out ways we can work together. In fact, right before I came into my office to do this podcast interview, I left a meeting with the mayor of Harrisburg. And we are working on an active transportation issue where we're trying to see if we can do a road diet on a main road that has seen quite a number of pedestrian fatalities. We want to make it safer for everybody, and particularly for pedestrians. And we're trying to figure out a way that we can do so where the PennDOT team as well as the city team can get on the same page. And we know we can get there. Right now, we have some work to do, but we will get there. And so those discussions are happening right now. We are very willing to have them. We look at anything from, you know, bump outs, from road diets, from raised crossings. We just did, when I came on board here, a major pedestrian improvement project around the Capitol complex. We put in bike lanes where they didn't exist before. We put in bump outs. We made sure that certain intersections, crosswalks were repainted and placed in different areas than they were previously. And so the Capitol complex here in Harrisburg is a lot safer and is a lot, you know, accessible for those traveling, again, pedestrians, bicyclists, as well as vehicles. And so we're looking to do that. It's a project at a time. Like I said, we can't just put a statewide fix on everything, but those conversations sometimes are a little slower than some people would like, but we are committed to it, and our team has the best of intentions in providing those improvements.
I'm really glad to hear that. I hope Ohio is going to look toward you to see some changes. I mean, it seems like it happens slowly. You look back and you, like, we have the Ohio Erie Canal towpath, and it's such a wonderful, mm-hmm. it's such a wonderful option for us, and we ride it a lot. But when I think back, it was 30 years ago that we talked about it, and it's just now starting to get completed. The last little piece will fall into place, like, in the next few months. 30 years is it seems like such a long time, but, you know, I guess things just take a long time. I have one.
Certain things do. Certain things, and transportation projects can take a long time, but true. But we have to keep it moving as much as we can.
Yeah, and I don't really want to talk about, you know, infrastructure on a national level and an infrastructure package, which has still not gotten to Washington. It's an important thing. But the last thing I want to talk about is the health issues associated with driving as opposed to walking and cycling and getting kids out there. And I know it may be a little bit out of your realm, but do you see ways to get fewer parents driving and encouraging their kids to go outside, whether they walk their kids to school or cycle with them? I mean, are there any programs like that you're seeing?
We are. So in addition to my role here in PennDOT, I have a national role, which is the chair of Active Transportation Council for ASHTO. That's the American Association of State Transportation Officials.
No kidding.
Officials.
Who knew?
Yeah, it was a very road and bridge centric organization until a few years ago when they realized where there always used to be Department of Highways, there's now Departments of Transportation. And that's because people get around in all different ways, and it's not just all roads and bridges. So they wanted their structure to reflect that. They divided themselves into six councils, each, you know, representing a different mode. And I've had the honor of chairing the Active Transportation Council since its inception, which was 2 years ago. And we've done a lot of work, and we've done a lot of research in this area. So one of our goals on our strategic plan, it involves research, and another one involves data. And so we are looking at where the data gaps are and how states have collected data and how we can be consistent so we can compare that data. But in looking at the gaps, you know, this gap of how we collect data on children and how they get to schools has definitely come up. We have looked at some pilot programs that other states and communities are doing, some communities here in Pennsylvania, such as human school buses, where children gather together, right, so that they can travel to school the majority of the way in a group. And they are much safer when they travel in a group because cars can see a group of children much better than they can see one child. And so we are looking at those types of programs, how successful they are. If they are successful, what attributes to that success? You know, what other factors do they need? What types of walks, you know, where they're going? And so we are gathering that data. So the good news is on a national level, we are getting a good assessment of that data and where it needs to go and working on that. Of course, we know, you know, look, obesity and people not going outdoors is an issue. I see it on my own street, right? There's this habit of even people driving their children to the school bus stop, which is very, very interesting. You know, I used to have to, I mean, I remember it this way, and I might remember it a lot worse than it actually was, but I walked quite a distance to school for elementary school. And then for high school, I walked quite a distance to a school bus. I know it wasn't just two blocks. It felt like 2 miles. It was definitely a 20-minute walk. So I know it was over a mile. And I know rules have changed, and for some good reasons, a lot of them have changed. But yeah, we are trying to get that message out, and that with all the cars around the school bus stops, and as you can imagine, when the kids get on the school bus, and then all the cars leave the school bus stop, and then all the other cars that are on that roadway, it lends to, you know, a lot more chances for injuries and accidents to happen. In fact, this week or last week, I can't remember, is school bus safety and walking to school was just recently. And so we do try to raise that awareness. I just read, I just want to, if you have not already read it, an interesting article on blue zones, which are communities where a large percentage of the population, more than in other areas, live to be 100 years or older. And one of the reasons why these healthy communities where people are seeing such longevity is that they walk, and they walk to places. And walking is part of their daily activity, right? They don't hop in the car if they have to get to some place that's a mile or 2 miles away. They walk there. And again, it is built into their, into their daily routine. They're not running to a gym to be on a treadmill, right? For 2 miles, they're actually using it. So it's very interesting. They also have walking clubs in several of these blue zone communities. So it's a sense of connection to your community, to your neighborhood, to your neighbors. And they're seeing that interaction, which definitely comes about when you walk around your neighborhood as opposed to drive around your neighborhood, how that's important to your health as well. And so we're looking at all of those positive aspects. And obviously the Council on Active Transportation is compiling this data and looking at ways where we can make this available to everybody. Here at PennDOT, we work very closely with the Department of Conservation and Natural Resources on trails, on safe walking issues. And we also work with our Department of Health. Making sure that everybody has access to trails. That's one of our goals here in Pennsylvania, and that they have the option when appropriate to get to where they need to be by walking or biking as well. So those are all things we're working on. The tie to health is a very clear one, and one that we're, you know, very aware of, and we want to leverage to the highest ability that we can.
I really appreciate you taking all this time to talk with me today. Can you let my listeners, especially those who are living in Pennsylvania, and I know we have quite a few, where they can find out information about the master plan, where they can weigh in if there are options to do that, and where they can watch as things begin to unfold?
Absolutely. That would be really helpful. If any of your listeners, and we encourage it, want to check out our plan, please go to our website at PennDOT.gov, and you can see information. You can see the draft plan will be available in mid-November of this year in 2019. We would love to hear your comments. In general, we would love to hear your comments anyway. There's opportunities to comment on any concerns or have any questions answered on our website as well. I always say we can only address concerns that we know about. So if there's anything that is bothering anybody or any questions that anyone has, please ask us, give us an opportunity to let you know why certain things are being done here or what's being considered and what we're looking at. We would love to hear from you and we would love to share with you what we're doing.
We've been talking with Leslie Richards. She is the Secretary of Transportation for the state of Pennsylvania. I really appreciate the time today and all of your input. I think it sounds like PA is doing some really cool things. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
All righty. Take care.
You too.
Secretary of Transportation for PennDOT, Leslie Richards, joined me from her office in Harrisburg, PA. If you're interested in the Bicycle and Pedestrian Master Plan, you can log on to PennDOT.gov. As Secretary Richard says, especially if you live in PA, your input would be most appreciated. So that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed my conversations with Celine Yeager, Sam Wood, and Secretary of Transportation, Leslie Richards. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a brand new show. Please remember, you can always join the conversation on our Facebook page. You can send us a tweet at Outspoken Cyclist without an E. You can also leave a comment on our blog, OutspokenCyclist.com. I hope you have a great week. I hope it's warm enough so that if you have a chance, you can go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.